I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. I have the pleasure today of speaking with multimedia, multi-genre artist Mike Stasny. Mike, how are you doing?
Very, very well. It's a pleasure to be here, Floyd.
It is a pleasure to have you here. Mike, let's start, I guess, with your journey to Atlanta. I'm always curious about that. So how did you get from where you're from to Atlanta?
Wow. That's, I guess I can take the circuitous route and talk a little bit too much than I need to, but, well, I grew up in the Midwest and I was a flight attendant for 9 years. That job evaporated because the airline went under, and, Maggie, my partner, got a job at Wonder Root, and the city that we were living in, which shall remain nameless, was a great city, but I think we needed to be a tourist for a while and just like see how a city operated, and Atlanta seemed perfect. So
now, since we're not mentioning that city, I won't mention it.
But I guess we can. It's just occasionally I get really excited about cities and can say things controversial and put my foot in my mouth. But yeah, there's just so much potential in that city, and I hope at some point we can it's St. Louis, yeah. Just to be straight up, but there's just so much potential there. And we just got exhausted trying to use that potential and just have it kind of keep on fizzling out. So,
well, I wanted to maybe go back to that time in St. Louis and talk about your transition to Atlanta, because in your art, it seems like something happened between St. Louis and Atlanta. And I was trying to figure out what that was, because your work in St. Louis, from what I could tell of it, was more 2D, a lot more large-scale images, and your work, for as long as I've known you here, has been a lot more 3D, much more just larger creations, much more personality in a very different way. So I was wondering if you could give some perspective on what happened to you personally between St. Louis and Atlanta that maybe is reflected in your art?
That's really interesting question, because I suppose I had to give myself a crash course on my aesthetic. And I know that I had certain things that entertained me in St. Louis, but art there was definitely like a recreational kind of thing, because I had a job that was the umbilical cord to my art practice. Whereas when I came to Atlanta, I was like, okay, I'm going to be art, period. So I went through like a couple of awkward steps, but I found, for better and for worse, that I was most useful when it came to, and I mean this in the most positive way, party art or decorated party art. So something that like blew people's minds, but that maybe they wouldn't want in their home. So it was perfect to have around for people that were just, you know, getting wasted. And I was very happy to do that. So right now I'm still kind of like going through the identity crisis of figuring out who I am as an artist. And I would like to start, you know, stepping it up and have a gallery representation or some sort of like actual museum presence. But I can't avoid the fact that, I mean, I just love to cut loose and get wild, and so does my art. So it likes to be in an environment where it's kind of bananas.
Well, I've noticed that your art does have this personality that lends itself to very festive moments.
And that's a good way of putting it, festive moments, by the way. Yeah. Party
no
art. Festive moments. I make festive moment art. Yes.
Use that. Use that. But I'm always curious about your process and maybe even your choices for materials, because I'm always curious whenever I see that you're going to be presenting some work. I wonder what Mike is going to use this time around. So talk about maybe your process and maybe your investigation of different materials to use.
Wow. Floyd, I'm loving your questions, man. I mean, I checked out your podcast. I'm like, man, Floyd's got this down. But thank you for this question. This is a great one. I have always, I don't know if all Midwesterners are like this, but we're kind of stereotyped as being really hard workers. We're like the dwarves. You know, we work really hard and we, you know, produce these things. So in an alchemist in a kind of way, you know, you make things out of like bashing the hammer multiple amount of times. So being from the Midwest, I'm also very frugal. So, you find a cheap way to make something. So for me, the cheapest thing and the most interesting materials were always like garbage pretty much. So, I mean, right now I'm working with a lot of busted up, old, lost furniture and working so hard to transform it into my next sculptures, which are still in the vernacular of the monsters, weird kind of animals that I'm, you know, trying to make more like the peacock and beautiful than the horror monster kind of creature. But yeah, it was more about working inexpensively and working hard that led me to the different materials that I had. And that has made all the difference.
Now, you talked earlier about being from the Midwest, and I knew that. And when I see your work, specifically the monsters and the big masks, that for me seems to be somewhat of a departure from, I don't want to use the term Midwest values, but let's just use that. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's more, I guess, a reflection of your own maybe right. way of seeing the world. But can you either link those two or maybe show how maybe you diverged from those traditional quote unquote values?
See, it's interesting too, because I mean, every once in a while I start thinking about like if I start off something saying like, well, I'm a Gemini, so I blah, blah, blah. Basically, that's like a way of my brain uploading and saying, okay, I'm uploading. Now here's something I'm going to say after I've uploaded. So I think saying like I'm from the Midwest or like I'm a recovering Catholic or something, like whatever, like these things are a way for me to announce that I'm about to say something declarative that I haven't really figured out, but I'm about to. And from the Midwest and monsters and creatures, largeness. I mean, I guess I could liken it if I had to, because there's a lot of steel mills out there and I was very much accustomed to those. And I grew up around them. You know, my dad worked in a steel mill. So when I would go there and I was summer help at the steel mill, like that's a man-made volcano. So like when you're a kid and you're kind of around these things, you look at them pumping out steel for everything around the world and you're like, whoa, that's a volcano. That's, you see these fires spitting out of things and it really brings tingles to the back of your neck. And I mean, I guess if I could just like force a 2 second thought on that, like because I'd seen that work and that effort and that grit to build things in that kind of sense where it's raw, but you can see this imagination and it usually manifests itself in monstrosity or not in the negative way, but an imagination way, not in a scary kind of way, but in like a childish kind of like thinking about himself being a person that can throw lightning bolts or something. That's how I suppose my materials have just sat in me. And the way that the Midwest has kind of trained me is that it's more about an imagination of strength and energy, but in this silly kind of fun way, Dungeons and Dragons kind of way, maybe.
What happiness or satisfaction do you get out of the hard work of your art?
Oh, it's almost that I've thought about this a lot, and the satisfaction almost is irrelevant. It's almost just like a modus operandi. It's like I have no choice. I have to work hard. Like I can't outsource things and ask other people to do stuff. It's very hard for me to tell people what to do. It's more so like work. And if you see something that needs to get done, you do it. And I mean, I'm not going to say that's a Midwestern thing, but I think it is. I'll say that it's just like maybe the way I was raised. It's like, well, you just have to do it yourself. So
now, as far as the reception that you've received because of your work, and I think that you've been able to distinguish yourself in terms of maybe your aesthetic, even though you're still evolving, mm-hmm. as you mentioned earlier, I think that your aesthetic has been well received locally here in Atlanta. What has that meant to you?
Whoa, Lloyd, another good question. That's the last time I'm going to say another good question. But and by another, I mean another good question. It's been awesome. Like to be able to say to people that I make artwork and people pay for it or people respect it or people commission me to do things. I mean, that's the other part. It's like if it's for a party and it's just going to be put up and I put so much effort into it, but somebody paid me to do that, it's a remarkable sensation because I never had that before. You know, it was more just like recreation. Like if that person's got the time to make art, you know, obviously it's a privilege for them to show it. But that's not the case. You know, like it's really like hard work. And for somebody to like recognize that, and people in Atlanta do, or at least I've gotten lucky in Atlanta and somebody's like, oh, yeah, I could use you for this project or whatever. It's meant the world. And that's what keeps me like really in love with Atlanta and the people around here is that there's a great community of artists and there's a great community of people that are thirsty to help artists on their way. End of question. End of answer of question.
Well, let's stay right there in terms of your connection to the Atlanta community, because I feel like in a very short amount of time relative to a lot of artists who have been here, you've been able through your art to connect with a lot of people and really understand maybe some of the challenges that artists in Atlanta may be confronting along with the opportunities. Mm-hmm. So could you talk a little bit about the Sumptuary?
Okay. There's a couple of things. There's a lot going in on that question. So as far as people here and my ability to have gotten where I am, I just was able to follow a really lucky path to meet great people really quickly. And the cornerstone of that is Maggie's relationship with Wonderroot. And basically, because I was collecting unemployment and looking for other jobs and figuring out my place here, I was just volunteering everywhere. And that way I met so many people. And before you know it, like you're working with these people. You're not just volunteering for these people. So it was all over the board. The way that Maggie and I have kind of like manifested this idea of Sumptuary is that we had always recognized, oh, and for people out there, Sumptuary is this project that's up and coming just down the way. It's going through March and April, but it'll be a reoccurring thing, hopefully. But it has been toying with the idea of finance and art and how you can kind of like couple things up on a very do-it-yourself kind of level. So for here, we thought like, okay, well, there's one thing missing. Like there are people that are paying for things that commission you because they're part of a big company or something like that to work and produce something like PBR commissions an artist to make a mural, for instance, you know. But that's very much a corporate kind of sponsored kind of thing. With Sumptuary, it's very much on a ground basis. Like there's this collective of people, thus Atlanta of people, where things are funded by consumables. So donations based off of snacks and drinks and whatever people consume in a space, thus Sumptuary. So we thought that, okay, well, because that hasn't really happened here in a very obvious kind of way, let's just do it so we can fund artists and kind of point out like different ways of thinking of it here rather than just having a top-down kind of thing. Like let's have it a bottom feeding each other bottom or middle feeding each other the middle kind of thing. If that makes any sense, I think I rambled a little much on there.
I think it was a great answer. As you mentioned, there's a lot in there, but I do believe that there are a lot of commingling issues, challenges, opportunities that the arts community embraces. And mm-hmm. I think this is one of those things that really speaks to that in a very direct way. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, I guess I now that you've mentioned that, so like art and the appreciation of art is really economically diverse. So like you've got the poorest of the poor producing the art and the wealthiest of the wealthy appreciating it and actually funding it. And then you've got everything in between. So it's an interesting spectrum to think about the creative class and people that are interested in creativity. So I guess with Sumptuary, we're actually thinking about like the how do we fund it within our own community while still respecting all these other communities. And we'll see how it goes.
Also, just because we're talking about it, I want to make sure that I actually pronounce it correctly. I think I mispronounced it earlier. Mm-hmm. Sumptuary.
Yeah, Sumptuary.
All right.
So tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering how you came to this space of thinking. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to when maybe you left St. Louis mm-hmm. and you came to Atlanta and your art became a primary pursuit for you. Mm-hmm. How has your perception of art or your career, even in this current space that you're in, mm-hmm. how did that change once you decided that you were going to put art first?
Wow. It's still a complicated thing because art and the funding of art has so many different ways that you can kind of perceive it. You can become a designer and you can do like logos or creativity, I guess, is what we're talking about here. But art in this kind of like very boiled down to its essence, fine art kind of thing is like such an esoteric realm of museums buying certain works and representing certain works, galleries representing certain works. And then there's high-end commodity products, I jokingly refer to them as, and that's like somebody paints something and sells it to a rich person for $2,000 so they can put it in their loft or something like that, just so they have some real art on their wall. So I guess because I've got like kind of a working class background, how did I merge the idea of working class with an appreciation of artwork and how that can all kind of mix together? So you work hard and you sell something that somebody wants, which is consumables. So like alcohol, food, whatever. And that in turn can fund the art, but art has such a strange place when you're in it. And what if you perceived it like an employee that's always there, like somebody that's serving you the drinks? They're just as important. The ambiance, you know, that's really why people come there, is a certain kind of brand. But that belongs to interior decorators and designers and branders. So we thought like, okay, when it comes to an actual artist or a gallery or something like that, and you're having experiential work, that should be paid for people coming there and experiencing it. And what better bloodline or what better way to show that than through alcohol or food or whatever, whatever's there, that like it's actual like a litmus test of how many people actually came there and are willing to spend money on this thing that you did.
Well, let's stay there. And I want to dig a tad bit deeper, though, because I'm trying to get mm-hmm. more to maybe your own growth in thinking about art in this way. Mm-hmm. When you were still working as a flight attendant mm-hmm. and maybe art was not secondary, but maybe not primary.
Mm-hmm. Definitely first in my heart.
Right. So when you were in that headspace, mm-hmm. were these the kinds of things that you were thinking about then versus now when you're sort of moving art into the primary position, if you will, where you're starting to believe, you know, different thoughts about how an artist lives versus your previous mm-hmm. state where you were not using art to live, I guess, financially live.
Right. Well, I always wanted to, I guess, for lack of a better term, retire to making art. So these models have always been in place in my head. Like, how do you make art fundable? How do you – within the economic bracket that I'm located? And I'd never liked the idea of schmoozing up to somebody and like trying to like sell myself and in essence selling my work. I've never liked that. But I do like the idea of having a personality and people appreciating that and coming to me to – In what better way than saying like, hey, I'm coming to your bar. You've got personality at this bar and I'm going to buy drinks here rather than the bar down the street. So like that whole process and that artistic process of that money transfer and the personality that's on the wall, they're not that separable to me. So when I came here, I thought the idea was, you know, kind of not going to work here. I thought it was more like a St. Louis thing. Like maybe like people in St. Louis would appreciate that kind of concept. Like, okay, well, I'm giving you $5 for this drink, but I love this space, but they wouldn't buy any of the work on the wall. And I didn't know how much that would translate here. And it just so happens that it will translate here, or I feel that it will translate here. So it's just always been a self-sufficient kind of like concept. I didn't come from like super amounts of money, so I'm not making like this work just off of fun. I mean, I believe in it and I want to do it. And I believe in not trying to make something that's marketable to somebody. I want people just to experience it and enjoy themselves. So like, how do you reconcile all these conflicting, crazy ideas of where money comes from and the work you want to produce?
You said earlier that Atlanta has been good to you thus far. And I want to get your thoughts on Atlanta in terms of what inspires you about Atlanta.
Oh, wow. The drive and the means to drive. I feel that like where St. Louis has the buildings, if we could only take all those buildings and plop them here, it's like the goat farm times infinity. Everything, you know, nothing burned down there. So like there's all these old turn of the century buildings that are so outstanding. But the thing that Atlanta has that St. Louis doesn't have is just like the drive by any means necessary to make something happen. And I love that. And it's so ripe. So as far as the art scene here, it's like you can be an inventor and a morpher of the art scene. You can basically help it birth right now, which is super cool because you've got all these different practices involved where economics, intellectuals, just people that want to give you beer. You know, like it's the whole world of wanting to create culture in Atlanta that's working for it right now because they're all wanting to like make this culture take place. And you just have to like couple with the other people that are ambitious and excited about making Atlanta something.
When are you at your best?
When am I at my best?
Creatively, physically, emotionally, all of the above.
When am I at my best? It's weird because I would say that kind of happens after the fact. Like, I didn't know something was a pretty cool thing until it had already passed me by. But that's the beautiful, fleeting moment about it. Because I'm always working so hard on whatever I'm doing that I only know, like, afterwards that, like, hey, that was a pretty perfect thing. That or when I have a bunch of coffee.
Well, if you're out there listening and you run into Mike Stasny at a coffee shop, buy him some coffee. In the meantime, Mike, let everyone know how they can get in contact with you or follow you or just learn more about your work.
So right now, I think the best way is to check out sumptuaryarts.com. And because my spelling is terrible off the top of my head, I'm going to have to look at this card here. It's sumptuaryarts.com. And just check it out. It should be a wild ride.
Mike Stasny, thank you for your time.
Floyd, thank you, man.